10 minutes late in our commencement this morning. We still haven't gotten anything resolved from my constituents in Harney County. The loss of 61 jobs, of state jobs at the Harney County facility is the equivalent of nearly 9,000 jobs in one fell swoop lost in the Portland area. So I am continuing to wear my beef it's what's for dinner hat until we can get something resolved for those folks and eat more beef, please. With that, Karen Sturgeon is our legislative committee assistant. Dallas Wyan continues to represent the Department of Fiscal, Legislative Fiscal Office. Thank you. And we're scheduled today to hear the Department of Administrative Services Information Resource and Management Division. Please.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is John Latimer. I'm director of the Information Resources Management Division of the Department of Administrative Services.
Perhaps you'd like to buy that acronym, John.
Sometimes right? Called CIO, IRD, TAS. That's three, right?
Thank you very much.
I don't think they'll fit in there, but I guess you got to put them in one at a time.
Well, that's why Cora is there to help you.
I have some more here, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
You can put 20s in and they go innies.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Information Resources Management Division is the technology service provider for state agencies. Today we are working to provide the basic foundation for the state's IT infrastructure. Networks are our basic foundation for essentially all of we do to provide. I guess I better move this along, shouldn't I? The networks are the foundation for what we do in providing our services across state government. We have over 750 phone systems, including 35,000 phones. We're the sole provider of video conferencing for public entities in Oregon and the state's internet service provider. And we provide, of course, connectivity to the network. We also operate the state's general government data center. We provide data hosting service for mainframes and open systems to over 200 state agencies, boards, and commissions, and some local governments. We host and process critical statewide applications like statewide payroll, state financial management systems. We provide system development consulting and programming, including applications for statewide development and maintaining the critical statewide programs such as the state's accounting system and the payroll system. As examples of the variety of the work that we do with state agencies, as revenue, we created the 2001-2002 electronic filing tax applications. At the Marine Board, we created a decal printing process. At PEB, we created the open enrollment web page. And we've created, very recently this last summer, a legislative tracking system that's used by state agencies. We also provide technical training. Through our technical education program, we provide close to 500 classes each biennium that range from desktop technical classes and executive training in technology. And this is essentially a program that brokers services for state agencies using either educational institutions or private providers of training for folks. We also provide the infrastructure and management of the state's electronic government program, or e-government. We successfully launched SecurePay, the ability to pay for services online. In just 1 month, we've had over 400 transactions through three agencies. We are working with Secretary of State, the applications for business registration renewal, the Oregon Marine Board renewing boat registrations, and we have the potential for 56,000 registrations in February. The Oregon Department of Transportation Motor Carrier Division, payment for weight mile taxes. And later this year, e-government will deliver enterprise-wide content management capabilities.
Good. Representative Johnson's recognized.
I just want to make sure I understood what you just said, Mr. Latimer. You're doing the boat registration for the Marine Board?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we're providing the ability for the Marine Board boat registrants to register over the Internet and pay over the Internet.
The reason that I asked the question is that, as you know, I used to run the aeronautics, the Department of Aviation, and they do registration there. I'm going to encourage them to come and visit with you and see if your pay over the internet system can save costs there as well.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, indeed, we are working with Department of Aviation currently for an enterprise licensing application. It would be with them and several other agencies.
Great, then I'll save the call. Thank you.
This is all in startup phase. Is that right, John?
Yeah.
So when we hear numbers like 400 a month, that's going to go to 4,000 and then to 40,000.
Forever and ever.
Great.
We also provide project management services for statewide projects. If you'll remember last session, the legislature funded and promoted project management as a way to help prevent major IT failures. Currently, we're providing assistance to over 20 active enterprise technology projects. All of our state project managers are state certified. Examples of some of our projects are the Oregon Liquor Control Commission Warehouse Automation Project, Public Employees Benefit Board, Benefit Management System, and the State of Oregon Enterprise Network, e-government implementation, e-procurement. And we're also working with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. You notice I didn't say ODFW. Move to Salem.
Well, how quick they learn.
And enterprise licensing.
But is that still on schedule to move to get Salem, John?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it is.
Fine.
Something new for us is we're providing publishing and distribution solutions for state agencies. We've moved this new section to the Information Resources Management Division this last summer. This provides services to public agencies for printing and publishing, and we're currently producing an average of 10 million impressions per month.
John, if that separate printing state printer's office was segregated off all in of itself, given the proper amount of overhead allocation, would it show a profit? Should it show at least a break even, or are we, with regard to the assessments that are against that, or is that?
Mr. Chairman, the publishing distribution section that we have is it's not making a profit, but it's making enough to have a reasonable ending balance and maintain the program.
All right. We'll get a chance to see that, I assume, when we get into the numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you. Need to speed it up, or we're gonna start losing folks here, John.
All right. We also facilitate the geographic information system. In summary, we provide leadership, coordination, management, oversight, and support for Oregon's statewide information technology enterprise by planning and evaluating consulting with state agencies, working with other CIOs to develop statewide technology architecture, providing quality assurance oversight, setting a framework for enterprise technology development, and setting security standards. So this is what we do, and this next is where we're going. Our mission is to lead the state of Oregon to an enterprise information technology model by providing leadership for effective and efficient management of state resources. We accomplish this by providing expertise in technology and information management, and we promote the availability of common technology services and shared technology infrastructure, employing economies of scale for maximization and reliability, performance and security, providing transparent, reliable infrastructure for service delivery in the nature of a utility, and we want to minimize implementation and operating costs. The technological evolution and convergence of technology has changed landscape considerably in the years since many of our foundational technical decisions were made. Because of this, the state can now use technology as a strategic tool. For example, we can consolidate and integrate the state's multiple voice networks into a single self-healing network. Do we have time for me to show you a little example of that?
Go right ahead, John.
I don't know whether you can see this. Maybe I should bring it up closer. This is an example of a state office, a regional office. And you can see all of the 112 business lines coming into that building, and then all of the phone systems and the data circuits going out of that building. What we plan to do then is essentially create a single phone system into that building and with a master router, and then one single line of data and voice going out. You can imagine how much this will save the state agencies statewide as we converge and groom these networks.
What's the...
Go ahead, Mr. Chair.
I see the savings when the thing is completed, but how about the transition costs, contracts that exist for leased phones, contracts that are locked in for X number of years of service from a provider? Have you calculated the period of time that it will take for the transition and the cost for the transition?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, yes, we're working on that now. The cost of this transition will essentially be paid for by the savings as we move along. We can't do this all. This won't happen all at once. We'll have to work agency by agency, building by building, to make this work. But it will happen over time, and we think in the long run, and at least a biennial, we'll begin to see the savings, and then we'll accrue those savings then every biennium after.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Is there any vulnerability in going to one provider? We've all seen the horror stories of different providers collapse, and I recall from last regular session, somebody in the bowels of some building somewhere had not renewed the AT&T contract, and this may be anecdotal and may not even be true, but to a loss of $1 million in state money. Are we vulnerable with a single provider?
One of the reasons we're working to change the way we do our network is just because of that very issue. We did have some problems with AT&T. I don't recall that we lost $1 million, but it was that when we were going to use AT&T in Portland for the Portland State Office Building and Portland agencies, and they could not make it work. So we worked an agreement with them to back out of that contract. We work with several providers, the major ones being Quest and Verizon, but we work with several providers. Let me show you something that may help answer your question.
That's an excellent question, because the issue of redundancy is also a question there too.
And I'll get to that issue of redundancy.
You get the prize for the
oh, yeah.
This is most lively graph.
This is our current frame relay network. You can see that this includes a lot of agencies, ODOT, state police, us, higher ed, a whole lot of people that go all over the state for a variety of reasons. It also includes K-12. So you can see that although we have a backbone up and down here, we have all of these networks going out across the state. If one of these gets cut, they're down. Now let me show you what we're planning to do.
You'll notice that the larger of those receiving areas was Scappoose, not Portland.
I saw that. That caught my attention right away.
This is where we plan to go. This would create a circle backbone around the state so that if you do get a cut or you do have a problem with one provider, it just goes back around the other way. And so we have this backbone with these various points of presence that would then feed off to county seats, to school districts, to ODOT offices, etc. And this would be For one thing, it would be a much more inexpensive way to do it and will provide far more utility both to the agencies and to the citizens as we move to this.
I think the figure that comes to mind back a few directors ago was that the number of routers that we had within the state of Oregon was not second to any phone company and almost not second to any consortium of phone companies. The state of Oregon had huge capacity. I don't know the decision was made to maintain all of that capacity. Go ahead,
Mr. Chairman, what we will do is essentially groom that network by removing a lot of those excess lines and excess routers that are no longer needed. I think I said ODOT, so I'll put another dollar in here. No, you can put it in.
I won't tell him it's only 2 bits apiece until afterwards. If you won't, I won't.
I said it several times already.
Representative Patrick is recognized.
So what's your timetable on converting these people over to?
We hope to have a great deal of it done by the end of this year. The problem, of course, is each of the agents we have to work with will have to help us do that. And that'll go faster or slower depending on the agency's staff and the agency's ability to help us make this work. We're finding that there are networks out there we didn't even know existed, or circuits, I should say, that we didn't even know existed. So assuming that we don't run into that kind of thing in a lot of places, we hope to get a large portion of this done by the end of this year.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Patrick.
So do we have an edict from DAS and the governor that says by X date you'll have transferred over to this statewide self-healing network that will be done? And is there some, or does DAS have the ability within its statutory framework to be able to do that?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we do have the statutory authority to do that. The political authority is what we need. And Director Weeks has told state agencies that this is the way we're going. In fact, he met with the Information Technology Executive Council, which is made up of some major state agencies, and with the CIO Council, and told them that this is the way we're going. And they're really not arguing. They can see the benefit of this kind of change in our network, so that because it'll save them money and save the state resources.
Okay. Representative Petrus.
I think it's responsive, but we still don't have a drop dead date. So
yeah, it would be important to do that. So please continue, John.
Okay. I'm getting lost here. Isn't it?
You're coming into goals, I think, John.
Huh?
Goals on page 5, or
okay.
Did you finish that up? You're working on that.
I think I'm working on that, but I'm not real sure. Oh, here we go. I'm missing a page here somewhere.
Ooh. It's off the information highway someplace.
Okay, I've really talked about this. We really want to enable the development of an enterprise approach to technology. And that, not just networks, but mainframes, desktops, a variety of IT or technology infrastructure that we have in the state. We want to create it in the nature of a utility, where it's much like an electrical utility or a water utility, in that you turn it on and it's there and you don't have to worry about it. The agencies will be able to spend more time worrying about their programs and not have to worry about the technology. We're also working with the leadership across the state to do this. We're not doing it by ourselves. The agencies are coming along. They're willing partners. And one of the things that we really want to make sure we use is life cycle development as we move forward. And we want to create an ability to use for agents to use specialized tools. And I'll talk about that a little later. T. tactically, our goals are to develop or standardize architecture development and communication systems. We want to reduce the complexity and cost of enterprise information resources, ensure security of state systems through our networks, and data improve information management capabilities. We want to better enable us to plan for business continuity and disaster recovery, and we've been working with a group of agencies to do that. One of the things that the Information Technology Executive Council created in addition to a strategic plan was an IRM planning process. In order to make these goals a reality, we must support the business process of state government. I've been talking to agency directors about the need for everyone to understand that business must drive technology, not the other way around. We want to ensure business analysis and planning occurs prior to the initiation of IT projects and procurements through education and technical assistance. This would be the part before you have a project, before you do project management. We want to streamline the process for procuring IT products and services, and you have before you this this session, House Bill 2341, that would hope to do that. We want to develop an enterprise-wide asset management system and portfolio management process, develop workforce with skills to develop, manage, and operate, maintain the state information technology resources, and ensure that IT projects are delivered on time and within budget. We can support the business of state government by creating a technology utility in the way we provide our services. In order to do so, we will provide a state-of-the-art, stable, and redundant hosting environment, integrate publishing and distribution into our organization, improve information access and system interoperability through internet and intranet technologies, organize and manage IT infrastructure based on sound business and economic considerations. This is our...
I have a question. How are you going to pay for the statewide intranet?
The intranet? This is part of our e-government program. It's already built into the e-government platform.
Okay, so they're going to access it via the web. They're not going to access it via the internal network. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Our 0103 organization chart, I don't know how you want to do these. We'll be talking about them later. Do you want me to go through each?
Why don't we just come back to it, John,
okay.
as you make the presentation to us.
Okay. I think you have a third chart in there, which will be a proposed organization chart. The reason we have this in here, this is something we're working with Director Weeks and the Governor on in order to organize to do the enterprise approach to technology. Our staff assist agencies and CIOs in those agencies with enterprise strategic planning, including development of architecture and standards. They also support interagency and intergovernmental organizations, and I've got a list of those later on. And finally, we support the Joint Committee on Information Management and Technology, as well as Budget and Management Division and LFO. Our various sections that we have include our electronic government program or e-government program that is funded through a statewide assessment or will be this coming biennium. It provides business coordination for state agencies in the electronic delivery of government services to enable them to serve citizens via the Internet. We have a geographic information system, which is also a statewide assessment, and the standards for geographic information is set by an organization called the Oregon Geographic Information Council, which is made up of agency directors and technology experts in GIS from state, federal, and local agencies, And it really is an excellent example of a governance process that helps set standards and meet the needs, business needs of government agencies, rather than just provide technology. We also have an enterprise security program, and it's being developed by a newly hired chief information security officer. His job is to develop a statewide security policy and to assist state agencies in the implementation of that policy.
Do other states do that as well, Tom?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you.
As we talked about, we staff the enterprise network services, and this is a rate model. Our phones and networks access to the Internet is paid through a rate model. The staff operate the state's wide area network, support enterprise telephone and data applications, and provide video conferencing services, and manages the enterprise telecommunications contracts.
And we get some breakdown of that, all of the costs and overhead of the telephone and network system, John, as we're further examining your budget.
Okay.
We get that detail.
Sure.
Thank you. Including the outside contracts. Also Representative Patridge is recognized.
I'm just interested, too, if the state's looking at the IP telephony systems as opposed to doing all of our kind of off-the-shelf systems we have now, switching to an IP system.
Mr. Chair, President Patridge, indeed we are. In fact, we have IP telephone systems installed in a variety of places, and we're looking at moving in that direction. As you know, IP telephony doesn't always work the way you think it might work, and it isn't always as cheap as it ought to be. So, but we're working in that direction.
Thanks. Ms. Johnson?
Nothing. I was just, Mr. Chair, wondering if the word telephony was worth a quarter.
No.
That's a real word.
It's a real word.
It's only 10 minutes after 9 today, and I've already learned a new word.
Well, I almost mispronounced it, too.
In government,
I did
pronounce it telephony.
Okay. We also provide the General Government Data Center, which is funded through a rate model, and it provides computer services through a mainframe. It also has open systems platforms, data warehouse databases, and database management. We also, through the data center, provide archiving services through the Burns Archive Center. Our Office for Systems Development and Consulting provides computer programming and design, systems analysis, systems integration, and database administration. This is paid for through a fee for service. Our Project Management Office, which was, as you know, was established by the last session of the legislature, is also a fee for service organization, and provides project management services for large, complex, statewide IT projects, including leadership standards and methodologies for enterprise-wide IT projects. And I think I told you all of our project managers are certified as project managers. We also provide technical education through our technical education provider sources. This is a brokering service, and it provides technical education for not just state agencies, but also for local government employees. The training is provided via lecturer certification programs, such as the project management certification program, customized training, often in partnerships with educational institutions and other organizations with specialized expertise. We now have also the publishing and distribution section, which is funded through a rate model. It provides publishing and digital printing and copying, offset printing, web design and maintenance, mailing, shipping, and intra-agency mail services. This first set of performance measures are the performance measures that are linked to our agency benchmarks. The first is one I'll have to interpret and put into English. This is our quality assurance benchmark, And so what these words actually mean is that these are the percentage, we'll look at the percentage of projects that are completed on time, completed within budget, and whether or not it delivered at least 90% of the features that were expected and the performance expectations that were expected. The next is, one of the things we're really trying to do is we're constantly striving to reduce total cost of ownership and for our centrally provided technology. So we will measure improvement from year to year in the reduction in total cost of ownership for centrally provided technology services. We will also track the percentage of agencies who have successfully completed an e-government launch with our assistance, and the percentage of respondents to a department-wide performance satisfaction survey who rank very good or excellent our services.
Those are ongoing performances, John. We've got some information on those.
We will, yes.
Thank you.
These are the factors affecting our services. As you know, because we serve all state agencies, we have the funds that are used to buy our services come from a variety of different sources, including the federal government. And the federal government, as many of you know, through the Office of Management Budget Circular A87, requires that you very carefully account for the federal dollars you're using in this program so that you don't overuse federal dollars and underuse state dollars in their perspective. So we are audited almost every year on whether or not we're meeting those cost principles under A87. We also will need to comply with the Federal Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 96. These are the famous HIPAA mandates. Not all of those have been promulgated by the federal government as yet. We will have Homeland Security regulations and requirements. Those also are waiting to see what they will be. Clearly, one of the things that affects us the most is rapidly changing technology and, of course, customer demand, particularly as we move forward with our enterprise technology
services. Probably Homeland Security will come with a little more money than HIPAA did with the mandates there, I hope.
Yes, we haven't seen it yet, Mr. Chair. These are all the organizations, well, not all of them, but a large portion of the organizations that our policy and planning group work with. And the first two are state agency organizations that have been helping us develop our enterprise strategy and our enterprise architecture. The Oregon Geographic Information Council really sets the policies and standards for geospatial information.
Does someone from Harchenko's shop sit on that as well to assist our assessors?
Mr. Chairman, on the Oregon Geographic Information Council?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Thank you.
Jim Maneri does.
Thank you.
The director, Elizabeth Harchenko, sits on the Information Technology Executive Council. We also work with the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board, the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, which has legislation they presented to this session. The Oregon Public Education Network, we're working very closely with them to help groom their network and help hopefully reduce the cost for schools. And the Oregon Cooperative Purchasing Program, which is often referred to as ORCAP. This allows local governments and nonprofits to buy off of our contracts, particularly the State of Oregon Enterprise Network contract. We are developing in terms of our administrative cost controls, we are developing an enterprise IT security policy. We are implementing an enterprise e-commerce solution. We have created agency savings through long-distance telephone contract that was signed last spring. We are applying enterprise project management services to large-scale enterprise information technology projects.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Senator Winters is recognized.
When you said you realized savings, you knew
long-distance telephone contract, how much?
I believe it's about
70 million per year.
I'll have to get that for you, Senator.
Thank you.
Our enterprise project management services to large scale and enterprise information technologies help keep those projects on time, on budget. We are in the final stages of completing state mail consolidation plan with the transfer of the Department of Revenue mailroom for this next biennium, and our enterprise network consolidation will improve network capacity functionality while reducing costs.
It'll be consolidated into the state system, or will that be consolidated into the revenue system? The mailroom.
Oh, into our state system, into the publishing distribution section in our office.
Anticipating significant speed ups or savings there?
Mr. Chair, it should help quite a bit in speeding up their mail sorting and delivery. And it would and also they're also transferring a position to us, and so it will lower their costs while increasing the efficiency.
Okay.
We received a 10-12% volume discount in software licensing through consolidation and bulk purchase. We initiated cell phone savings by providing more plans, options, and controlling billing at agency level. This is something we just introduced. We implemented phase one of systems development lifecycle methodology in our systems development section, which results in lower cost and more supportable systems. We reorganized IRMD to streamline operations, reduce duplication, and centralize similar functions. And one that's not on here, we also contracted for an audit of phone bills. One of the things that we've discovered is that those large telephone companies don't always bill correctly. And what has been you're probably surprised to hear that. What we've discovered both in the private sector and in other states is you can, by auditing those bills, you can save substantial dollars. We have a contract with an organization that gets paid a percentage of the amount they're able to glean out of our phone bills. So, I guess you're next.
Representative Johnson recognized.
I'm just curious if you go to the expense of having a company audit the phone bills, whether or not any of the phone companies are audacious enough to try any funny business with state contracts. Have you discovered any slamming or cramming or other major bill irregularities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, in the traditional, in what I understand to be slamming, no. What we would call what we have been trying to get our telephone companies who have a contract with us, AT&T, Quest, Verizon, to stop doing is going to individual agencies and selling sort of off-the-shelf, off-the-contract wares that really mitigate the savings of the State of Oregon Enterprise Network contract that we have. We're being very firm with them about that, and we're trying to get agencies to understand that when they do that, they're really hurting the whole state.
I guess that was what I was looking at. The new take no prisoners attitude at DAS, I would presume that one indiscretion might result in rather severe chastisement, and I'm just looking for reassurance that there's a huge disincentive for them to pull any funny business inside the contracts that they hold with the State of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not sure about the disincentives. I think the disincentive is that they lose their goodwill with the State of Oregon if they do that. We've really been working very closely in the last year with the major telephone companies. They understand that the state has very major need in reducing our costs for telephony and networks and data transmission. And so they're really, they understand that. They're working with us. They're not losing money. And they're helping us.
Let's see. Dallas has a question. Senator, would you like to go ahead?
Just a question. Used to, in the past, the Pacific Northwest Railroad, you're talking AT&T, had a specific rep or reps assigned to work to the states. Do they still do that, or is it just kind of open season? Since you talked about their interaction with the agency, because in the past it used to wasn't that way.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, they still have representatives that
specific
take calls on. Well, they have representatives that work very closely with us, that are fairly high up in their organizations. They also have salespeople that do make calls on state agencies. We're trying to tell them that that's not a good idea, and we're trying to tell state agencies that they should be going through us. We find out about it when they make requests through us. They have to go through us to make these purchases. And so we are gently telling them that that's not what they should be doing.
And that's new then, because when I was with Montbell, you had specific individuals who were assigned to work with the state, and they alone worked with the state through marketing, and you didn't have other marketing people involved in working with state agencies.
How do you get that from Lucent Technologies?
Yeah.
Dallas? Let's see, Representative Dallas. Go ahead, Dallas. Representative Patrick.
Going back to your implementation of Phase one of the systems development lifecycle methodology, is this one that state agencies are going to have to follow? So,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Ryan, we hope they will. As you know, the state audits division, while I was there and are still talking to state agencies about the need for systems development lifecycle methodology. We have developed one. Many state agencies are using that methodology. We had contracted with an outside group, a consultant. What we found is that they wanted to make it so complicated that it was very difficult to apply. So we took what they gave us and we simplified it for use by state agencies, and state agencies are now very happily beginning to use that methodology.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick.
How often do we put out the state telephone contract to bid, the statewide contract?
It's a four-year contract.
And do we put provisions in there that would invalidate if they're slamming our various state agencies or they're signing up to DAS? I would be interested to know if we're putting in a provision that says if they come to a state agency, they sign them up for something, DAS has the ability to do it, that they could lose their statewide contract, or that we have the ability, if they don't approve it through DAS, they have the ability to invalidate it. It's a substantial enough contract that it would make some sense to be able to do that.
It is so a substantial contract.
Yeah. And secondly, I do have a question, if we can look into whether the state, I know we just switched over our network from one provider to another. Part of our problem was that we didn't know on the IP addresses, so it was a substantial cost and a substantial transfer. What I'm interested to know is if the state owns and provisions all of its own IP addresses as opposed to a carrier doing that, because a carrier can hold us hostage by not having IP addresses. I'd like to know if we've established that standard statewide and if that's actually being followed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, the contract is a very complicated, complex contract. It's huge. It took 2 years to negotiate and a lot of very high-priced lawyers. I don't believe there's anything in that contract that for that specific notion, but we'll have to find out. With regard to IP addresses, we do, in most cases, provision our own IP addresses. I'm not sure. Are there any agencies, do you know, Mike, that, or any providers?
Or service providers.
Yeah, I don't think there are any providers that are doing it outside of us.
So we own all our own IP addresses?
Yes.
Okay. because I know as you if you move from your first model to your second model, it will be a substantial problem.
Yes,
yeah.
It would be.
Just a brief overview of the Information Resources Management Division. My name is Cora Parker, for the record, from Department of Administrative Services, Budget Management Division. The governor's recommended budget for the Information Resource Management Division is $174.2 million. That's a 32.2% increase from the fifth special session level in 2001-03. That's largely a result, however, of transferring the publishing and distribution unit from the purchasing, PFSS. He bought it for me.
Cora, on some of the other budgets where we've got transfers around, we've got a budget pre-transfer and a budget post-transfer. I wonder if we might be able to get that information.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. We can segregate that information
Please.
For you to look at in work session. Moving to the next slide, this is just a quick breakout of the other funds, limited versus non-limited budget. You see that approximately 59% is in the non-limited category versus 41% in the limited category. The next slide is actually a bit out of order, but I'll go ahead and address it. Again, we talk about the 32.2% increase. And generally, the budget continues core functions for the division. It does transfer in the publishing and distribution functions from procurement, fleet, and surplus services. And then it incorporates a number of policy packages, which we'll talk about in a minute. The next slide just shows what publishing and distribution now makes up as a percentage of the IRMD budget. And you see that it's a 25% basically component of the total budget now. So it was a substantial increase compared to IRMD's other existing programs. And again, within the total budget on the next slide, just a breakout of the budget categories, 26.5% into personal services, the bulk of the dollars in the services and supplies lines, and then we've got small pieces for special payments, capital outlay, and some debt service. Moving to the next slide, talking about how we developed the governor's budget, we began with the legislatively adopted level for 0103, just over $104.7 million total funds. Legislative actions through April 2002 included e-board approval of the electronic government expenditures. There were some limited duration positions and some permanent positions that were related to that approval. There were some one-time reductions taken during second special session. Also, base budget adjustments include roll-up of position actions and compensation changes. And then essential packages, which John will talk about in a moment, are actually a reduction in this budget of just over just under $4.4 million. And that includes phasing out a substantial portion of the e-government approval at the emergency board. Looking at policy packages, Package 090 is a program reduction package. It actually reduces just over $4 million from the division's budget while establishing two positions. And John will get into the details of that package, but we're actually moving some things off of contract services and into the state and experiencing some substantial savings there. Package 340 is permanent financing for limited duration positions. That's an establishment of three positions, although they're not new. They are newly permanent. Right now they are filled positions in limited duration capacity. The next slide, Package 341. This is the continuation of the e-government program. No additional positions here. This is $1.9 million for ongoing maintenance and systems software. Package 390 is the Department of Revenue mail consolidation piece that John spoke about earlier. And that is now in the Information Resource Services or Management Division budget because of the transfer of the publishing and distribution unit. So that's where that piece is resting in the budget. Package 447 continues the e-procurement project. You see the dollars here within the IRMD budget. That's related to the PFSS budget. However, I think we spoke about it briefly the other day, actually. Package 450 on the next slide is actually a placeholder package at this point in time. When we were developing the governor's budget, if you look in your detailed budget document, you'll see a couple of packages that were denied, and the dollars were taken out of those packages and put into this package. The idea was to give the governor and the director of the department some additional time after the transition to work with IRMD and to develop exactly what they've wanted in this package. They are doing that. We basically have the dollars today, although we have not brought them to you. We will bring them to you for work session. I think John will talk some more about that as well. And then package 499 is simply the transfer. And other additional technical adjustments are the same as in other divisions related to position actions, merit freezes, et cetera.
Okay, are there questions of Cora? Please continue.
Okay. In 1993, for those of you who...
We're working, John, we're working towards the half hour is what we've got.
Okay.
Remaining. Thank you.
Two departments were combined in 1993. They were the General Services Department and the Department of the Executive Department, creating the Department of Administrative Services. And so IRMD was originally comprised of data networking and telephones from General Services, Central Computing Systems, Development Planning and Review from the Executive Department. Growth is primarily due to the merging of other technology programs in IRMD. In 1997, the Oregon Education Network merged with IRMD. This is the EdNet program. In 1997, Geographic Information Systems was brought into IRMD. In 1999-01, development of the enterprise concept, the State of Oregon Enterprise Network, the SOAN contract was the first outcome of the enterprise model. In 2001, the e-government program was formed. Program manager and team began in February of 2002. Summer of 2002, publishing and distribution was functionally merged with IRMD.
I'm sorry, Representative Senator Winters, please.
John, if I called your office, do I get a libel?
If you call my office, you do. I don't know how long that'll be.
But you know, an old telephone advisor who used to teach telephone etiquette and what have you. And I guess one of the things that I, in looking at customer service and looking at where we've gone in the bureaucracy, I'm very troubled that you call and you never get a voice. We relied so heavily on voice messaging that I can't help but think, I know that I'm frustrated when I call systems and all I get is this message that tells me to leapfrog to one place to the other place to the other place. And I told one of the VPs in the banking community, I said, you know, the first bank that comes out with back to customer service will probably get the market share of the business. And I think that's also true with us in government, that we've become so automated that people long to hear a voice on the other end. So I'm happy to hear that you pick up the phone when it rings at your desk.
You can even get me directly, Senator. Mr. Chair, Senator.
The only comment I would make there is that someone asked, I don't know whether it was in this administration or just when it was, asked every budget of every agency if the director of that agency had called their own numbers, had called their department to see if they could get in and get through, and to listen to the options. And I think it was another governor in another state, and they came back with a program to revamp their entire voicemail system. So, Senator Winters?
Well, last session in my committee, we did ask every administrator, you know, whether or not they answered their own phone or whether or not they'd called their number. I think sometimes we get, you know, so systematized that we actually forget about the human part of what we do in this building. And so I'm kind of encouraging that we do pick up the phones.
You know, John, if agency heads have called their own telephone numbers and called their system telephone number?
Mr. Chair, I only know that I have. So, Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, I've always thought that it's very important. I've always said this to every employee I've had and every job I've had in government. It's so important to be customer service oriented, to be citizen-centric, if you will, that I have always told our folks that it doesn't matter whether somebody calls that has no relationship to whatever we're doing, but you need to try and help them out. And I think it helps all of us when we do that. And I would hope all agencies would. In 2001, let's see, I think I said that, IRMD will continue to grow in 03-05 through the consolidation of technology. For example, the size of the IRMD network will double after consolidation with 540 connections to 1,150 connections, and we would imagine that the agency's networks would also decrease then. Now we get into the individual section performance measures. The enterprise network services, our voice system is available 99.9% of the time. Our data network is available 99.9% of the time. These are industry standards, and we maintain them. Our project management office, they strive to increase the number of IT projects that follow an accepted project management methodology and have qualified project managers assigned, increase the number of projects that use an earned value methodology or other measurement tool to track the progress of a project against schedule and budget. As I think I said before, we're really working to try and reduce the total cost of ownership as we do these projects. In our e-government program, which is, by the way, linked to the Oregon benchmarks, we want to make sure the percentage of all targeted agencies who have successfully completed the government launch with IRMD assistance is increased. The statewide technical education program increased the effectiveness of state government by providing affordable, accessible technical education and training and strive for a higher customer satisfaction rating. In publishing and distribution, we want to strive for accurate, cost-effective, and on-time publishing and distribution solutions for public agencies by on-time print delivery, accuracy of print, percentage of mail processed at discounted rate, percentage of interagency mail sorted correctly. And in the future, we'll be moving more and more to digital printing, and that's one of the reasons why the decision was made to move it to our office. The General Government Data Center, we will deliver a technology hosting environment for the state of Oregon in a very cost-effective manner. We want to have operational costs decrease while use increases. When we do that, unfortunately, it reduces our revenue, and we ran into that problem this last biennium. We also want the system to be available 99.9% of the time. Systems development and consulting. Since this is a fee for service function, we will measure new business generated, number of rework hours, revenue generated, customer satisfaction, turnaround time, number of service requests for major systems. Our business will grow as agencies can no longer afford to do in-house development and strive to meet enterprise standards. Our GIS, or Geospatial Enterprise Office, we strive to improve levels of coordination and data asset sharing. We want to see an increase in the number of web hits by segment of the GIS community. They're approximately 2.5 million last year. The number of data downloads by segment of the community and those held in common, approximately 1.5 million last year. And the number of shared data sets, approximately 113 last year.
Representative Patridge is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, is there a statewide standard that's being set? I know lots of local governments are investing substantial amounts of money into these systems, the GIS systems to look at, that not only include general geographic data, but sewer systems and road systems and everything else. Is there a statewide standard that's being set, or are we is the state continuing to spend money overlaying what local governments, and local governments are overlaying what the state's doing?
Mr. Chair, President Patrick, this is what the Oregon Geographic Information Council is attempting to do, and they're working very arduously at creating these various sectors of geospatial information that are all used, the standards are all used by everybody. It's very difficult, as you can imagine, because you can easily buy geographic information software and put on your laptop or your desktop computer. But we're really trying to push folks, and in general, the federal government does it also. That's why the Oregon Geographic Information Council has local governments representation, federal representation, and state agency. And they're moving fairly quickly to create those standards. We can't.
So what's the timeline for that?
It's moving along. We have set, I'll have to get back to you which standards we've set. We've set a number of standards, and we're moving apace to do that as we find new ones that people are interested in pulling together.
How much does the state spend in giving money or grants or information to local governments in terms of trying to do some of their GIS mapping for local government?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that question. We don't provide grants from my office, so we'd have to try and find that for you.
Well, I just don't know what
it seems like we need to be on a statewide system or some kind of data set that makes sense that can carry from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but I don't know.
Probably the Department of ODOT has some interaction with Department of Transport or Department of Revenue. Well, the Department of Revenue assists and supports local government, but that's why I asked about the Department of Revenue participating on your GIS group.
That's an important part of, Mr. Chair, that's an important part of what we're doing with GIS. Also, ODOT is a major player in geographic information, working with local communities to map the highways. I'm not sure where I stopped, so we'll move along.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes, please, Representative Patrick.
But how much money from this program?
The Geospatial Enterprise mm-hmm. Office?
We can get back to you with that information.
And how's it paid for?
Statewide assessment.
I'm just wondering why we had. I guess I wonder why we have an office and what we do if we don't have a statewide set of standards yet, and what we're going to use as enforcement mechanisms to make sure these things happen statewide. So, I mean, we can discuss that offline. That's a question. It's great to have an office, but I don't know what an office does if we don't have the ability to set and enforce standards.
There's a number of questions relative to each one of these, plus the policy option packages, as to how we're going to get buy-in from the other governments that are supposed to be contributing and using the information. So we need some buy-in and some enforcement and some timelines on all of the various issues here that are coming up. So if we could plan to do that probably tomorrow, we'll start back in at 090 and start back in probably in depth when we start up tomorrow. Please.
Security.
Yep, you're on security now.
We just have a new chief information security officer, and he's in the process of developing a statewide security policy. And what we want to do is facilitate a high rate of compliance to the information technology security policies when we set them by state agencies. The network becomes very important for that, particularly as we move to web-based applications throughout state government. And what we really want to make sure is that we have no effective statewide denial of service through our internet.
Where do we authorize the new chief of information officer for security. Was that in a prior session?
Mr. Chair, yes, it was.
Okay.
It was last session.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Yep. Thank you.
Okay, we move
to... Senator Winters recognized?
I have a question. Once the chief security officer has established the policies and the information that is needed for others, then what is the role and function of that particular officer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, the function of that chair will be to provide oversight and continued education. One of the problems with security is making sure state employees understand how important security is. When you have a strong security system, for example, passwords and IDs that people don't follow, or they make lists of their IDs or their passwords and put it out on it. We had an audit recently, or when I was state auditor, we had an audit where they actually had them Xeroxed and passed around in one agency. Obviously, it provides security holes. So there'll be what we're doing is really working after we do these policies is set up a risk assessment process that we'll go through. We'll work with the state audits division to make sure that their IT audit group is looking at this and bringing back to us issues that they're finding. And then we will talk to agencies very forcefully about their security. It's where it becomes so important is as we begin to use credit cards, or state agencies begin to accept credit cards, particularly DMV. And because those credit cards have to be maintained in a secure environment. And so we will be very hard on folks if they don't do that.
I guess where I'm going to follow up, is that we develop systems for efficiencies, and we develop them, hopefully on the long term, that there's going to be realized some savings. And it's been kind of like, if I look at the growth, what has happened, we develop a system and then we keep adding on to that system. And so I'm asking that question because, at some point, I think the system has to begin paying for itself, even if you're getting into some compliance issues. And I, as I go through and I'm looking at we start at one spot, and that is to develop, and then we add on to the next spot, and that is the compliance. And so I'm just trying to get a feel of where all this development is going. And
Mr. Chair,
do we ever get to the point of where we no longer need a position? I guess that's what I want to say.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, I would be surprised if we ever got to a point where we didn't need a chief security officer, because security is becoming more and more important.
That I think is fine, but do we ever get to a point in anywhere in our systems development or developing something that we no longer, that we work ourselves out of business for something?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, it's possible.
President Patrick is recognized.
Hey, Mr. Chair. I guess this points out, the security piece points out one of my overall concerns with DAS, and if we're moving to a COO kind of position, is I'm concerned that we develop statewide security standards, we have a security officer, but we don't have any auditing capability whatsoever within the division to make sure that departments are complying with the standards that we're setting up. And I guess that remains my concern with DAS as we move more towards a COO-type position. I don't see anywhere, and hopefully maybe some of that's in that placeholder package that Cora mentioned to us earlier, but in light of the programs and everything else we have, I think that's a critical component this committee really needs to look at. And I know I've mentioned it to the director and other people, is I don't want to create a whole other bureaucracy or whatever, but by the same token, if they don't have the personnel and tools to be able to go out and establish standards and make sure people are complying with them, oftentimes people won't comply, most of the time, I think. People won't comply. They'll comply with the pieces and parts that they like, but otherwise they won't comply with other things, and it continues to create a mess. So that's what I'm looking for as we look at this, and I don't want to create any more bureaucracy, but by the same token, I do think we need to continue to think ahead, even in the midst of critical budget crises, to look ahead to really see where we're going and hopefully get to some places that Senator Winters talks about seeing if we can realize some cost savings.
It'll be important to know that we do have agency head buy-in as well as then their staff, and that's something we can address as we take a look at
that. Make them sign a pledge or something, Mr. Chair?
You bet. their firstborn on the block.
Firstborn.
Please continue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, one of the things we do in terms of auditing this is we do audit it electronically through our network, operations center. We watch the traffic over the network, and so we're very quick to shut down an intrusion into our network. The problem becomes more of an agency problem where you have fraud within the agency due to people not maintaining security, rather than a problem with network security. Combined with our electronic monitoring and with the audits division watching these things carefully, and with our application process and our chief information security officer going agency to agency, we hope that we will make a big dent in our security problems. But the network is going to be key to that.
Thank you, John.
Okay, we're turning then to our essential packages. Package 10, this is the vacancy factor and non-fixed personal services. It includes standard inflation of 3.5% on such non-pick items, fixed items as temporaries, overtime, shift, and other differentials, and unemployment compensation, including the OPE associated with them, the amount of $2,520. Package also includes an increase to mass transit by $13,706. The division's vacancy factor increased from prior biennium, resulting in a reduction of $42,828 in personal services. The total amount of this package is $26,602. Package number 20. This is the cost of phased in and phased out programs and one-time costs. We have phased out one-time costs incurred in the 2001-03 related to the government program, equal to $5.6 million, other funds limited. This consists of services and supplies of $2,004,000 and capital outlay of $3,002,000. One position has been moved from IRMD to DAS Operations Division, which equals a shift of $128,702 personal services other funds. The total amount of this package is $5,702,494.
So is this intended that there's going to be continue to be an e-government section within DAS IRMD?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, yes, there will be.
Okay.
Package number 30, inflation price adjustments. This is an increase of cost of goods and services equals $1.2 million, other funds limited. This is based on the standard 3.5% inflation factor for services and supplies and capital outlays. The 3.5% inflation factor is not used for government service charges, such as building rent, attorney general charges, and so this number is based on the 79,000 state government charges is based on the price list. And so the package consists of $1.3 million other funds limited and 84,000 other funds non-limited for a total of $1,346,838. Package 90 is a budget reduction package. This we've established two FTE to replace two contractors for systems and database support with internal support. We've also eliminated services and supplies and capital outlay expenditure limitation, which could not be supported with an existing revenue stream. What we found was by replacing those two contractors with two FTE, we saved $700,000 a biennium. Financial Enhancement Packages, Package 340. Did you want to start on and go through enhancement packages today, or are we told
tomorrow? Why don't we plan to do that tomorrow? And that's where we're at, John. Is it enhancement packages?
Yeah.
Why don't we just pick that back up tomorrow, and then we'll move back to some of the other packages as well as we come back tomorrow. Let's plan to do that and pick this up at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. With that, we will go ahead and close.